Got it. Here we go. Write to us at mynorthwest.com. Text as well. Come on in, everybody. Do love to hear from you, from just about everybody. Teeny tiny lady in the pickle jar is going to choose the letter of the day. Jack Stein sitting in, and the president.
No, I sit on the stand. And it get hot. I got hairy legs.
I got hairy legs.
That turn blonde in the sun.
Yeah, diving in the I used to be so jealous of those guys. His legs turned blonde in the sun. Rich Ashburn, who played for the Philadelphia Phillies, was a great baseball player. I think he might also play for the Yankees. Richie Ashburn and his son, Richie Ashburn and Johnny Ashburn, also known as Johnny Ash Rash Hash, smokes a lot of hash. That was a rhyme we came up with back then. His legs used to turn blonde in the summer as well. Just naming some kids who I didn't like growing up. All right, Jack Stein, you want to throw a name out of somebody you didn't like as well growing up?
Oh, I like everybody, John. I'm a nice guy, you see? I'm not going to throw anybody under the bus on national radio. I mean, come on now, John Curley.
You're not even on national radio, so it's
all
right.
I like to imagine. I like to see, John, this is a
come on, there's going to be... I'll give you a first name of somebody you didn't like in high school. Come on, Jack.
We're actually international radio.
Yes, our
podcast is listened to in Nigeria, as we often discuss.
You're number 74 there in
Thanks,
Nigeria.
Thanks, Jacob.
There was
a guy in high school, his name was John, that there I didn't go. Particularly I didn't like that guy.
Believe it. Wow, spellbinding story. Let's see. Cleveland has decided it's going to change the name from Indians to Guardians. By the way, you've got to get drops when they went out on the street and ask people what they thought about it. This is after the 2021 season. So this is the Tom Hanks. Oh, my God.
We are a city on the rise. Forging into the future from our ironed-out past.
Tom, hold on a second. Have you ever been to Cleveland?
Tom Hanks?
No, you, not you, Jack. Tom Hanks. Tom, you ever been there?
We are a city of fire and water.
Yep, that's because the lake catches on fire. You are. The water caught on fire in Cleveland, right? Wasn't it one of the lakes or one of the rivers? Yeah. So you are a city of fire and water.
Of trees and towers, built through generations of blue collars and the brightest scholars and all of those who have worked harder. We hold tight to our roots and set our sights on tomorrow. And this is our team that has stood with our city for more than a century, from old municipal to the corner of Carnegie. A team that has seen its own progress and prosperity. Its history flows like the river through the heart of this city. A history that has given us miraculous moments. Moments that spanned years and others 22 games. Moments that broke barriers and moments that broke hearts. Moments that prove this is more than a game.
We are talking about baseball here, aren't we?
Yeah, that's
we
way
too much.
We
remember those moments as we move forward with change.
Uh-oh.
You see, it has always been Cleveland the best part of our name.
Oh, no.
And now it's time to unite as one family, one community, to build the next era for this team and
what
this
is
city.
Hold on, it goes on 9 more minutes. This gives us not have to talk about anything else.
To keep watch and guard what makes this game the greatest. To come together and welcome...
See, guard. We guard... Regarding what makes this game great.
From all who want to join us, we are loyal and proud and resilient. We protect what we've earned and always defend it. Together we stand with all who understand what it means to be born and built from the land. Because this is the city we love.
Okay, I can't take any more. There's only 10 more seconds. That is the Tom Hanks letting everybody know that they've decided to change the name, the Cleveland Indians, to the Cleveland Guardians.
Yeah,
so,
but it's like a cut from like a Michael Bay trailer. It's way too over the top. It's really pretentious. It's very conceited. And it's the emotional element of it is way too heightened. In my humble opinion, John Curley, the whole Guardians thing... They should have gone with something so innocuous that was so bad that nobody could object to it. And I have the perfect name for them.
Okay. What would that be?
This is not a joke. I think they should have referred to themselves as the Cleveland Corns. It's not a joke. I think if they went out on the field and they had little corns, like a corn on the cob on the
shirt.
Not
a joke.
Not a joke?
Not a joke.
Not a joke?
It's not a joke. Because in this day and age, everyone's going to find something wrong with Guardians, Mariners.
Are you joking?
I'm not joking.
Wait, the Cleveland Corns. Why corn?
Well, because, you know, there's corn in Ohio. It's pretty basic. I think that if we take everything back down to its the level of a kindergartner, no one can get offended. So instead of the Boston Red Sox, it would be the Boston Beans, right? We just make everything so stupid and so dumbed down that no one can get offended ever again, John.
I love all the names of those teams in the minor league stuff, right? They always have like the lint bugs and things like that. It's like, what
exactly?
You know, right, that kind of thing. But no, they had to go with the Guardian. By the way, that is Tom Hanks' view of Cleveland. Here is the tourism video and ad that they have for Cleveland.
Fun times in Cleveland again.
Still Cleveland.
Come on down to Cleveland Town, everyone. Under construction since 1868. See our river that catches on fire. Don't slow down in East Cleveland or you'll die. Our economy's based on LeBron James. Buy a house for the price of a VCR. It could be worse, though. At least we're not Detroit.
Wow.
Cleveland is one of the least safe cities in the nation, by the way. All right. Well, they have decided to change the name. I'm sure that'll do a lot. I know that Brian Buckley, bitter Brian Buckley, used to produce this show. He was a fan of the Cleveland Indians, and he would always say that Chief Wahoo was the most, you know, unbelievably racist guy you could possibly imagine. Yes, well, they phased him out, and then they asked a bunch of people what they thought about the whole thing. People in Cleveland, they're not going to like it, but the change happens, and here we go. So now we're just waiting for the Washington Redskins to get their official name as well. So this is the sports roundup. Last word on Cleveland and the new name? You want to still have them called the Corn?
Well, I think they just should have stuck it out, John. I think they just should have rolled with it. I think that despite all of the hate, they should just kept the name. I mean, you're the Cleveland Indians. You've always been the Cleveland Indians. There's nothing wrong with it. This capitulation to a small group of people out there who are upset about, what's the guy, Chief Wahoo or whatever it is?
Yeah.
What difference does it make? I could be offended by anything, John. I mean, the way that we've done things now in society is we have determined that we have to start with the most obvious of offenses and then work our way down. Hence, if you name it something as innocuous as corn, the Cleveland Corns, there is no possibility for any kind of anybody getting upset or protests or thinking that they live in a racist city.
I see. Okay, so a vegetable that is primarily served to pigs. Got it. Tokyo Olympics opened with Naomi Osaka lighting the cauldron, and apparently all the glitz and glamour was gone. They didn't do much because there wasn't anybody there to really enjoy it. And she lights. Do we have any sound of her lighting it? Is there anything, Jacob?
It's a fairly visual experience. You know,
I thought you'd hear like with the Bic lighter, the constant rolling the little thing through the finger. All right, and that's it. That she lights the thing, and off they go. This is the beginning of the Olympics. I have no idea what's happening in it, other than the fact that parents aren't allowed to come. Spectators are not part of it. A lot of sponsors spent tons and tons of money, and this is going to be a complete and absolute washout for Tokyo, unfortunately.
It's pretty cringe. The stadiums are empty. Have you seen any of the pictures of what it actually looks like in the arena or in these gymnast events or anything like that, John?
No, nothing. And I think
sad.
It's so sad. It's so
sad.
These athletes that have been training for this or caring about this or dreaming about this since the time they were a little kid, and now here they are. I hope they let the parents in. I'd seen that one story was done that the mom wasn't allowed to come in, but to cheer on her daughter or son. And they also believe that the fact that there are not spectators could actually have an effect upon the performance of the athletes. You're running the half mile or the mile or the quarter, and you can hear the people and hear them cheer. And that helps to have somebody kind of cheer you on so that they might actually have the times be a little less. And that'll be interesting to see if that actually turns out to be the case. How much crowd influence and how much cheering actually helps you while you're competing for the gold there in Tokyo or any other place. The fact that the critical race theory is now not going to be offered there in the Peninsula School District. And if you had attended the school board, you're now up on YouTube and 115 people have had a chance to watch.
There will be no additional or modified student curriculum, including critical race theory or instruction in response to Senate Bill 5044. As it does not mention or require additional instruction for students. The district will continue to teach a complete and accurate history that is inclusive and without bias. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? It's been approved 5-0.
That is the Peninsula School Board President David Olson, who obviously didn't do a vocal warm-up ahead of time, announcing the resolution regarding critical race theory.
John, do you know what critical race theory is?
Are
you
I do. With it? I'm going to give you one more little cut here. Hang on.
I believe the question is, why this resolution and why now? There is something behind it that hasn't been said, and I'd like the answer to that question. As a mom of a student of color who attended our schools, Peninsula High School in particular, the resolution is saying to me that maybe our kids of color don't matter. There's not a lot of us, and we're not going anywhere. So I need to know that we matter.
I ask that the board not cave to these special interest groups. I and many who are here tonight are also part of this Peninsula community, and we don't want to be silenced or railroaded by the radicals who have fallen for a manufactured campaign against a theory that isn't even taught in our schools.
72% of our nation's history has occurred under slavery or Jim Crow, and this resolution wants to ignore 72%.
Always use percentages if you want to win arguments. All right, that is from the people who are opposed to it there in Peninsula School Board. A lot of people saying the critical race theory is nothing more than a concept that was being taught in as legal in school in law school. And all of this is astroturfed by a small group of conservatives that want to use this as an issue to try to win in 2022, Jack.
Ooh. Well, John, so I studied CRT for a couple of semesters in college. Mm-hmm. CRT is this heady academic thing where we're talking about French Algiers and we're talking mm-hmm. about Franz Fanon and we're talking about Karl Marx and we're talking about economic systems that benefit white people over black people. It is so abstract that the idea that you would be teaching that to a 5-year or a 6-year-old, it does not happen. That's not CRT. But what they are teaching kids, John, is kind of a weird alternative version of it, where they take some of the beats of what CRT represents, or the way that we could use critical race theory as a lens. They take some of the beats of it. And then they say, okay, well, let's look at the internment of Japanese people during World War II, and let's equate that to white supremacy. Or let's look at Jim Crow, and let's look at the preceding events and equate that to, the United States. Mm-hmm. And so when we go around and we say, this is CRT, this is CRT, this is CRT, we sound like fools because it's not really CRT. Mm-hmm. It's some weird alternative version that I think is closer to the 1619 project than it is to CRT.
Uh-huh. The argument that is put forth by the left, and Tom says it as well, that this is just all hype. And people will say that it is a legal theory. And you're right. You look at it going back to the 1920s and the Frankfurt School. Marx also pushed it along, saying one group of people it's irreputable. Like, there's nothing you can do.
Exactly.
It's built right into the DNA that you are the oppressor and you are the oppressed. That there, you can do whatever you can possibly do. You can write as many laws, but it doesn't matter. It's almost like the air that you breathe and a virus that comes out of you that you have no way of controlling. So therefore, if you have the people that are pushing CRT in the schools, it's a way of saying, make the person aware of their superiority or their feeling of superiority so much so that they try to check it as best they can, but even checking it isn't possibly enough. So therefore, any sort of divergence between one grade and another grade, one white kid getting this grade and one Asian kid getting this grade and a black kid getting this grade, the reason there's a difference in there is because the system itself has been created by white people who are, by very nature being white, oppressing, whether consciously or unconsciously, everybody else.
Yeah, that's exactly
okay.
right. Yep.
Okay.
So, but you also got to sprinkle in some Hegelian philosophy in there as well, John. And then you also have to go, you know, back to essences and what whiteness really
means.
Wow,
you really did.
People.
Look at you showing off. Wow, I'm surprised you're going to ask, hey, aren't you going to give us a quiz before you let us go on Friday? You're that kid in the front row? Yeah. And so teach some kid, hey, listen, you should feel bad that your color of your skin is this.
Well,
I think the greatest damage that you can do to any kid, is to tell them that they can't succeed because of what happened and what has happened now. And if you tell the kid, everything is stacked against you and don't expect to do well because everyone is out to get you. I think that's far more damaging than believing that the world is white supremacist and that they're doing something against these kids. And to lower the bar and to say, well, you don't have to try as hard because the whole world is against you because the world is oppressing you. You are hobbling that kid's spirit, much like they hobbled runaway slaves that wanted to be free. Why can't you tell the kid you can be whatever you want to be? And you know what? Fight against it if you can. And by the way, the reason an Asian kid is getting all A's is most Asian kids, when they were surveyed in 2018, spend at least 2.5 to 3.5 hours doing homework. White kids do maybe, if they're not lying, they say an hour. And when they ask the black kids, they're like, yeah, maybe 20, 25 minutes. Well, there you go. Now, has white society oppressed the kid to not do the homework? Why does the one group do better than the other group? Is that because the system is racist? It doesn't make any sense.
Well, this is such a heavy conversation to get into, John, in 30 seconds. But what I will say is this. I don't like this stuff being taught to kids. I think it's really gross. But when I was in college, it was a lot more easy to contextualize it because you're 20-something years old and you're smoking a bunch of dope and you're trying to figure out the world. For a 12-year-old, there's no way that you could possibly look at the nuances of that argument and understand it.
Wow.
That was really a productive segment, wasn't it?
Thank you.
That's right.
Thank you. Thanks, Joe Biden.
Right. Josh Kearns, can you imagine that? People in their 20s smoking dope?
No. When they get to their 50s, then we have a problem.
Thanks, Tom. Can you get the door? Boy, CBS News really pushing that Delta COVID stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. 350 people died yesterday in the entire United States. At the peak, it was 4,250 were dying with or of COVID. That was the peak. 354 died yesterday. Two people died yesterday in the state of Washington from COVID. So
this is what I hear from learned people, though. My very good friend, Dr. Z, MD, PhD, his concern is basically like this.
Okay.
If you allow the Delta variant to spread, it will then become the Sigma variant or the Omega variant or the Pi Beta Capsilon variant and get drunk on a Wednesday before her test.
I'm pledging for that variant, by the way.
So his concern is, and he's a neurologist.
I'm a legacy too, so I'm definitely going to get in.
Are you worried about getting hazed, John? Or
I don't mind. I don't cover me in honey. Go ahead,
John. As a 59-year-old man going to a sorority, I will be your big sister. I will vouch for you.
Thank you. Keep going.
Okay.
So your doctor, with all the letters after his name,
he says that his concern is basically that the Delta variant gets into, I don't know, some kid who eats too much macaroni and cheese or some lady who's got some weird genetic variation or, some guy out there who has a certain kind of protein in his body. And through whatever reason, whatever, mechanical thing that happens within our body, it becomes a much more virulent and deadly version of the virus. So he's saying it's not about the Delta. It's about the next one that's coming along.
Ah, okay. You should ask your buddy whether or not he believes we are at herd immunity.
He is a bit of a communist, so it's kind of hard for me because I don't like masks and I don't like the idea of forcing people to get the vaccine. But then my buddy Dr. Z, in his mind, he always does this kind of hey, you know, if you if we're all in this together, we're all kind of participate. We're in a society. We're not individuals anymore. And of course, everybody always loses their minds over that kind of a thing. So as far as the whole herd immunity thing goes, in his mind, that won't matter if we get the Omega virus and Charlton Heston comes out and has to defeat vampires. You see what I'm saying, John? That if you get the Omega virus, that'll be the end-all, be-all virus.
I see. Well, you cannot completely eradicate a virus. I think the only one we've ever gotten rid of entirely and not even a virus was polio, the polio vaccine, right?
Right.
This virus will mutate and change, and the people that are getting this Delta tend to be don't even realize they have it. They're asymptomatic, right? They don't know they have it. If they have it, it is described as features that would resemble a cold. So I'm just I always just try to keep it in perspective. So when you hear, don't ever, 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 ever let any news organization give you a percentage. Because a percentage doesn't tell you anything. A percentage is not within the context of you being able to truly understand what it is. A 400% increase is from zero to what? So we've had a 400% increase. We went from zero people.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. So then all of a sudden you're, wow, 1,000% increase. Now you go, whoa, 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 whoa. Hold on. Yeah. I want to know a number.
Right.
And then I want to know, how many are we talking of the total amount of people? So we had 335 million people, and I want to know, okay, so then how many people in the state of Hawaii, and then how old were they, and have secondary conditions. Don't, and I've been saying this since this whole thing started, and when you start to hear these officials in the state of Hawaii, we might have to bring masks back, and we're going to overwhelm our hospitals. All right, here's some numbers for you. You ready? There's 350 people in the hospital in the state of Washington right now with COVID. Okay? There are 27 on ventilators. There are more than 10,000 hospital beds. So when you start to hear these people at the Washington State Health start telling us that you'd be better look out, everybody, we're going to overwhelm our hospitals. We get Governor Inslee start talking about, we got to flatten the curve. We got to flatten, we got to pound it, got to pound it, got to pound it. We've got 10,000 beds. We've got 350 people right now in the hospital. We had 349 yesterday. We have 350 now. Okay. So you start to think, okay, are we picking back up again? Where are we with herd immunity on breakthrough? Those people that had COVID, the new Delta that comes up. I understand your friend looking, you know, worst case scenario, this thing, somebody else gets it and then turns into some sort of mutant thing. And then Charlton Heston standing there, you know, without his shirt on. Dirty, stinky apes! Right? They did it! Statue of Liberty's all torn down. Yeah, I got it. Just give me the numbers. I have been saying that. Jacob's blood pouring out of Jacob's ears, which I think is a symptom that either he's got some sort of problem or being the producer of the show. Just give me the number. I don't want a percentage. I don't want, and I want to know how old the person was, how sick they were, how fat they were. Let me know. And then let me make a decision based upon that, not what you give me. 58%, 1,000% increase, all these people dying. I don't trust you. I will trust the number. Give me the number. I'm like Charlton Heston yelling, give me the number. I think in some one of his movie, he said that. Yes.
Do you remember when CNN, I think it was a couple, maybe probably about 6-7 months ago, at the end of, I think it was either Lemon or Cuomo, they would run a clip. It was about a 3 or 4 minute clip of everyone who had died from COVID-19 that they could get a little backstory on.
Yeah.
And I remember watching it one night, and it was, you know, this guy was 89 years old. He was a tuba player from Florida. And then this lady was 94 years old, and she was an ex-kindergarten teacher. And this person was 86 years old, and they used to work for Chevron or whatever it was. And after a couple of days of that, I went, why isn't anybody under? Why don't they get like a 40-year-old in the mix there? Because they didn't have one. They couldn't find a little blurb or some kind of a story to attach it to. So they had to go to these older people. Now, no offense if you're 89, 90 years old, but that was before they had the vaccine, and it was supposed to be very sad and very emotional. But you could kind of see right through it. And I was thinking to myself, why don't they show like someone in their 20s or someone in their 30s? Very, very suspicious, John Curley.
I don't. It's not suspicious. It's the narrative. I get it. I understand. And I am not saying that any one of those lives didn't mean anything. Understand. And give me the number. Don't try to spin it in a particular way. and get me to behave a particular way. I'll decide. This is the person sitting there. The skeptics that are on the fence, like they don't want to get vaccinated, it's because they made a decision a long time ago. They didn't want to wear a mask. They didn't want to do hand cleaning. They didn't like 6 feet. They made fun of all of it. This is their final stand, is no vaccination. That's their final sort of stand. And they can point to all of this sort of quiet, you know, noble lie manipulation to say, aha, see, there's one more bit of evidence that I need. That's one more step for me to hold my hand up and say, I'm not going to get vaccinated. It's just, it's a no win. You won't move those people. But don't take the percentages. Always ask for the number. Josh Kearns gives you the exact problems on the road right now without percentages. Let's do the story. Would this happen in SeaTac that this guy is being referred to as a genius?
Yeah.
I think the headline should be, people have lowered the standard for genius.
Yeah, certainly.
Explain what this man did in order to become a genius.
So this gentleman, the genius that he is, says to himself, if I'm going to be in an airport, why would I want to sleep on the floor? Why would I want to nod off in one of those uncomfortable hospital chairs? Why don't I bring in a hammock and I string it up between two pillars, and then I get inside of it like I'm a little caterpillar waiting to blossom into a beautiful butterfly and fly away from SeaTac. Now, my question is to you, John, is that do you think that we have ruined airports, and as far as it being a social place to be? Because when I was a kid, when you went to the airport, it was a huge deal. You went in and you saw the pilots and you saw the stewardesses, and it was this magical, mystical thing. And you were wearing blue jeans and a button-up shirt because you were getting on a plane to fly somewhere. You were an important person. And now when I go there, it's somebody in sweatpants. They just got out of bed. Maybe they're wearing a shirt that fits nicely. Maybe not. It's just, people are just so miserable at the airport that now it's almost like being in a gypsy camp or something like that. There's someone like roasting a goat waiting for their plane to land. Kids are running around screaming all of the time. An airport now is kind of like a, like it's like almost like a community camp or something like that. And this guy is making it even worse by taking a hammock and then stringing it up and laying inside of it.
I have to tell you, if you've ever flown and you have a layover or you're tired.
Yeah.
Yeah. I get serious about finding a place to sleep. And you only need a few people curled up in a corner somewhere to sort of give you the visual that it's okay to also now find a dark corner.
Right.
When I'm tired and I'm traveling, I'm very, very, very focused on the quiet spot somewhere underneath chairs. I take my shoes off. I make a little pile. I create a pillow with my feet, with my shoes. And then I put like, I wrap a blanket around it, and I put all stuff around my face, and I bring all my things in really, really tight. And I'm underneath a series of cluster of chairs, and I don't care how dirty it is, but I'm like, if I have a 4 hour layover, I'm going to sleep. And I don't, and that guy in the thing, I have one of those. I've never hooked it to something else, but I, you know, when you're tired, I get angry tired, and I'm like, I'm sleeping right here. I would sleep on an ATM machine if I could, because they're warm. I felt the top of them, and that kind of, and I would get up there somewhere. I don't care. I'm like a cat. I'm like an angry, tired cat that's got a layover. You know those things?
John, I don't know if I told you this, but I used to be a drug addict. And one time.
Sorry, no, I shouldn't have laughed at that. I should explain that we were.
You just laugh at people that have drug problems.
Not a joke.
It's not a joke, Jacob. It's not a joke, Jacob.
So one time, my band had just finished being on tour, and we were going to fly from Logan to San Francisco. And so all the guys were like, oh, we got to go. But I was a vicious heroin addict at the time. So I said, I'm going
to
go.
Wait, why don't you pause and allow Jacob to laugh at you? Go ahead.
I'll pause.
not a
Jacob,
joke.
I got it out of my system. I'm good.
Okay, so I go out and I buy street-level heroin. It's not a very exciting story. The exciting story is that I realize on my way to the airport that I can't smuggle heroin through an airport because that's a federal offense. So I have the brilliant idea that I'm just going to do it all. I'm just gonna get loaded, and I'll get on the plane, and I'll fall asleep on the plane, and it'll be totally fine. Yeah. By the time I get through security, I'm at the seventh level. You know, I'm John Lennon. I'm Maxwell Steel Hammer. I'm totally gone. I get to the gate. I put my feet up on my guitar case, and I pass out. I was in that airport for 12 hours asleep. The plane had left before I woke up and said, oh, no, something's gone terribly, terribly wrong.
Not a good plan on your part.
No, it backfired horribly on me.
I like the fact that you told the story that you did announce that you bought street-level heroin, as if, you know, like oh, he steps outside of the airport and buys more sophisticated. Because that's a far more relatable for everybody. Because, you know, because you're on the radio, you think you're all hoity-toity. So you do it. And by the way, I bought street-level heroin, everybody.
You know,
so
when
don't
you're in
judge
a rush.
Me.
Yeah, when you're in a rush, you got to buy street-level. It's not like I walk into a CVS and just pick it off the counter. You know, who's got that
Wait,
kind of
money? Wait, hold on a second. Where do you what airport were you in that you all of a sudden just had access to street level heroin?
No,
like, what city is that?
I was in Boston.
Boston.
So we left the hotel, and I said, I know a couple of guys on a street corner that are my type of guys, and lo and behold, they were my type of guys. So
and Corn Pop was a bad dude, and he ran a bunch of bad boys.
Exactly.
That's where you went. Hung out with Corn Pop.
Yep.
All right, Josh Currens, thank you for sharing, and I hope you weren't too offended by Jacob's laughter. We'll explain that later. Josh Currens looking at traffic for us on a Friday. How we doing?